In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Hey, I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Modern Apocrypha.
Welcome.
So,
yeah, it's been an interesting week, man. It's been really crazy for the news and what people seem to be going through right now. It seems to be, to me anyway, that we're having a week of crazy, where everyone's presuppositions are being challenged from whatever wherever they stand. Right? So, yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of crazy for the past 5-10 years, and it's just ramping up. And this week is another example of that. And, you know, I enjoy having my presuppositions challenged. I've actually happened on some stuff in the past couple of weeks that's totally wild, cool, interesting stuff. I don't know that we'll get into that in this episode, but I would love to visit it sometime soon. Stuff to do with the Nephilim and the U.S. government having records that are declassified of them communicating with demons on purpose since the 1940s and making agreements with demons and, you wow. know, just absolutely insane stuff. Not that it surprises me exactly, but it's stuff that's kind of, I had never known about this.
Sure.
So yeah. Anyway, so I know you were the one who had the subject for us this time, and sort of went with crazy. Go ahead.
So it boils down to the gatekeepers being broken down. On one level, we used to trust in some sort of authority to say this is a good source or a bad source, and that's gone. This strikes me as a particularly biblical allegory because the Jews begged for a king. They wanted someone to tell them what's right, tell them something to do. And that was never going to fly.
Well, you know, that's a pattern we've seen all through human history where people always look to some kind of authority and that authority always abuses them and abuses its authority and it doesn't fly.
Sure.
So absolutely.
So I brought this to your attention just for something for people to go after. I assume we're going to watch a few minutes of it. This is Dr. Brian Keating's podcast, and he posted to a YouTube channel. And he is someone who has professed that he went to school with a plan and crafted a career for the purpose of winning a Nobel Prize. So he picked his study topic, the way he studied, the way he documented everything about, he was aiming for a prize. And now, from that perspective, someone at the top of the scientific community, he is just very upset about the lack of gatekeeping through Joe Rogan and, you know, just broad people that have more scope than he does, people who can talk to more ears than he can without the prerequisite of having kissed the ring before he gets to talk. It's upsetting to him that just everybody can talk. And how do we survive where you have to work out for yourself whether or not something is true or not? And the flip side of that is Eric Weinstein, a astrophysicist. What is he?
I mean,
scientist of sorts. He tears into him a bit, saying that you've given this up. When you stood up and said, take that shot, you gave it up.
Well, let's try it. I haven't actually tried sharing screens or anything on the podcast before. I'm going to give it a shot here. We'll see how it goes.
Sure.
So let's see if I can grab it here.
And let's do a quick pause start if we can, so we can edit it in as we need.
No.
Got it? Okay.
Here we go.
Do you believe in the Gambinos? Is everyone who believes that the Gambino crime family exists a conspiracy theorist? We never use the term
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's sort of undermining the original point.
I don't think so.
The erosion. I'm not calling Terrence Howard a conspiracy theorist. I'm calling him a manipulator, maybe an actor, maybe a sensationalist.
Curious.
I don't know why. Of course, he's definitely a curious person. But I'm asking you, he's undoubtedly smart. He's at the upper, 0.01% of people in his profession. It doesn't come by accident. But my question is, does that do damage? If I tried to act as Terrence Howard, I would utterly fail miserably and no one would take me seriously. But if I start to opine about his acting chops, then no one should listen to me. It shouldn't be a halo effect because the man was nominated for an Oscar in 2000.
No, but
what is the downstream? Hold on. What is the downstream effect of having such people platformed on? And I'm not for suppressing him. I'm just saying, what is the downstream effect? And is there a negative contributor to that? I mean, we have a responsibility to the public to curious minds. It's not like you're just talking to Joe over a beer.
So the thing that I think where I am is, do you realize what we do? We say everyone can be a scientist. Here's literally how we talk to grade school children. Everyone can be a scientist. All you need to do is to take an interest in something, form a hypothesis, take some data, try to revise your hypothesis. It's fun. It's not something for other people. Science is for you. Okay? Now, what I think happened is Terrence Howard heard that his whole life, took it seriously, found out a ton of interesting stuff, made all sorts of connections. And there's some way in which we are going to blame Terrence Howard for following exactly the instructions we give, which is everyone can be a scientist.
I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming the people that are relying on him for scientific knowledge and for facts, not for wisdom, not for curiosity or inspiration, for relying on Terrence Howard for science. And believe me, if you don't think that there's, three quarters of the audience or that's listening right now that could be positively predisposed to it, I think that's not being accurate. There's a tremendous number of people that I've received comments from in all day. Here's Tesla said the same thing about frequency, energy, vibration. Here's a quote from, Epictetus, whatever. And at what level does that undermine maybe his noble intentions to excite people? I mean, what if you found out that the universe is 13.8 billion years, but that actually fits into a 7-day biblical narrative of Genesis quite accurately? In fact, is that dangerous? I mean, if that is, how would you relate to that? Or that it's actually a 5,700-year-old universe? At what level do we stake curiosity and say that these are non-overlapping magisteria or, whatnot, and they're harmless? And what point do they become harmful? I wanted to restrict it to him and perhaps Tucker and Bart Sibrel for their, different classes, but I think this is quite curious. And if the 1 times 1 equals 2, do you want that person to be, filling out your bill at the restaurant or charting your course on your airplane?
I hesitate to say it, but I will say the following. There is a technical way in which 1 times 1 equals 2.
Oh, no, we're not doing
that. Wait, one second.
I'm going to have to shut down.
No, you don't. You don't.
Get into rings and
no, it's a group,
but that's not the way you
know. Oh,
go ahead.
I know very well. He's wrong. Okay. Can we agree that he's wrong so that we don't get it?
We can agree. I want everyone listening.
Yeah, the dangerous thing is that we call the real numbers under addition a group, and the law inside a group is called group multiplication, and the group multiplication of the real numbers under addition is. The group multiplication law is addition. Now, I fear what happens when people, a little knowledge being a dangerous thing, if people get confused by the fact that we use the word multiplication to mean addition in that situation, then you can say, oh, no, he's actually right, which he isn't. You can take any one of these things and push it. What I'm trying to say is I would really like us to completely overhaul the relationship between science, the elite, speculation, research. I would like us to acknowledge all the times that an amateur beat the experts, and that, you know, Green's function, for example, would be a good example of this in the past. It's rare, but it happens. The problem that we have is that we would basically like to say too many things. We'd like to say, we want all of you to think of yourself as scientists. We'd like everyone to not fear research and try to do their own research. No, wait a minute. We don't mean do your own research if it contradicts the public health narrative. It's public health science. Yes, it is on Tuesdays. No, it isn't otherwise. We've gotten ourselves into such a web of contradictions that we are going to have to extricate ourselves. And the first thing that I'd like us to do is to take all of the terms, crackpot, lunatic, et cetera, and think very, very carefully about how we dole them out. And then I'd like to say, why are we inviting everyone into science? Do we want them to do their own research, or do we not want them to do their own research? And if we don't want them, can we explain to them why we don't want them to do their own research? What I'm thinking, Brian, is that the current relationship is unsalvageable. Now, what you and I believe is that science as a method of thinking, of a way of approaching the world, is second to none. And what we're in danger of doing is losing its preeminence in the mind of the public, which is now so turned around by the abuse of science and its use as a political tool that we cannot count on people saying, wait a minute, can we get an expert opinion? Does this claim about the square root of 2? I mean, I'm just going to say it very clearly. To claim that the square root of 2 is somehow distinguished because its cube is equal to 2 times the square root of 2 is simply to say that the square root of 2 is one of 3 roots of a cubic polynomial that factors as y minus the square root of 2.
Okay, so is that good enough? Shall we call it there?
I would point out, if anybody is watching and can see along, pull that back up, the screen.
Yeah, sure.
Just to show people how much it made everybody's hair start on fire, look at the videos next to it. Response to Terrence Howard. Problem with the theory of everything. Terrence Howard. Billy Carson worse than Terrence Howard. Right? I mean, hundreds of people that hold up their faith of document with their diploma that just can't handle.
You know, this is an age-old story, right? It's like this Keating guy is, what would I say? He's one of those people who believes very strongly in appeal to authority, in, you know, trusting the trusting the views that have been handed down and that have been built up over time. And he is very much of the establishment of, quote, science, right?
And 1000%. He is the establishment of science for sure.
And what we've discovered over the past, few years especially, but really ever since I was a kid, is that they're corrupt. The establishment is utterly corrupt. And it isn't necessarily that the individual people are corrupt. It's that their ideas have been corrupted by the bad presuppositions that they allowed to get in by the manipulation of the enemy.
And you heard it even in that. What if you found something that backed up the Bible? Would you release that?
Right, exactly. That is a perfect case in point. And actually, it made your clip even better that you wanted to share there, because it's really, really ugly. It's genuinely ugly. And I don't even know. You know, my own response to this, I can tell you what my response has been, and that has been to just throw out all of the authoritative sources completely and start on my own. And when a question interested me enough to look into it, I went and did enough research to satisfy me. But I built my worldview based on God said, based on God himself. I didn't start from nothing. I didn't start from the idea that I can trust what I hear and see and touch. And that's because when I was a kid, I realized that what I can hear and see and touch is not trustworthy, that my perceptions can be manipulated. And that,
it's interesting you say that, because that ties in perfectly with the thought that science today, science as it exists, is not divine. And in that, you have the eyewitness report problem, where eyewitness reports are not accurate. You know your eyes lie. You know your ears lie. And if you know that, then you take your eyewitness report to the best you can, gather up a bunch of them as best you can, right? And that's kind of like, if you believed it and you believe it for 600 years, well, okay, maybe, right? Or you can just trust God, because God said.
Well, and here's the the complicating factor there is that we live in a world where there are spiritual beings that really interfere with our actions and our workings. And so when, for example, they have an agenda to make it so that nobody believes in those spiritual beings, and they exert themselves for 150 years to that end, and they're interfering with anybody who is in an authoritative position, who has credentials, who would back that up, and trying to discredit them, then after 150 years, you get this effect where they have essentially blackballed anybody who came out against their view of things, and they successfully manipulated public opinion to the point where you can't trust the general authoritative sources at all. And that's a real problem, because these people have, they start with this view that there is nobody trying to screw with their brains, and then they look around and they say, see, nothing in science proves that there's something out there trying to screw with our brains. So we have now reinforced our paradigm and we're good, man. And we don't have to believe in these spiritual things. And then you come upon this stuff where exactly in that, as in that clip where people want to talk about creation and, well, you know.
Yeah. The problem with codified correctness, if you will, is it doesn't take into account all of time. Right? You could say that this is true within a group. This is true within a space, right? God just says this is true. There's a difference.
Well, and we've found out over and over again that when the Bible says something, we're better off just trusting it and accepting it as best we can understand it. You know, maybe not everything at face value, but we're better off just trusting what the Bible says as best we can understand it than we are looking to modern scientific or modern research discoveries to try to inform that. We're better off just trusting it, because it turns out that it's right and modern discoveries are wrong almost all the time.
I'm not entirely against the idea of trust, but trust and verify. I trust it and I verify it, and it's never unverified. Right?
Well, and
through the verification, I'm teaching myself, I'm learning, and I'm not learning crap. I'm learning good stuff.
Of course. Well, and to add to that, just in by way of agreement with you, there are things about the Bible that we had sort of forgotten for a long time. So, for example, did you know that back in Jesus's day, there was a view among the teachers in the Jewish nation that there were two powers in heaven named Yahweh, that it wasn't just God the Father, that there was another Yahweh. It's like in the context of the Sodom and Gomorrah story, Yahweh called down fire and brimstone from Yahweh in heaven. So there's a person, the angel of the Lord, aka Jesus before he was incarnated, walking in the flesh or in the world, calling down destruction from heaven on Sodom and Gomorrah. There was an understanding of that among the Jewish teachers back before Jesus. And after Jesus, because they rejected him, they wrote it out of their beliefs. They don't teach it anymore. And it's only like this minority view that was barely preserved. And now finally, some people are rediscovering that this was once a thing. So even in the case of things like the Bible, the people who curate, the people who hold, you know, who are the record keepers for that stuff are not necessarily trustworthy. And so you're right. We do have to trust and we have to verify, even in the case of scripture. But when it comes to, and what I'm getting at here, though, and what I'm trying to express is that when it comes to authoritative sources, I will believe that if the Bible says something, and this is what I understand it to say, in sort of a plain reading, just a normal reading, where you don't have to stretch things or manipulate them to get out what you want, because everybody tries to do that, it seems like.
I do too.
Well, I know. I mean, I tend to, but at the same time, when my hunger for truth is stronger than my desire to come to a particular conclusion, that tends to lead me through to, you know, at least to not fall off the path too much. And so, yeah, when I get that plain reading, I elevate that to a high position of authority in my own thinking. I just do.
Sure. And your those things that you specifically, notice, those things that are important to you, those things that catch your eye, catch your ear. For me, that seems like the way that God can offer a message to one child over, a different message to two children saying the same message, right? The way that God can offer one message to the world and have the right people get the right message out of it, it's the only way that could happen. That's the only way that could happen in my view.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. And just to translate for anybody who didn't get that, am I right to say that what you're saying is that two different people will read the scriptures and they will get messages that aren't quite the same out of the same verse, but they're both true, and it's because God intended to teach them a specific thing.
And God will get that to you through your previous experience and the time in your life that you hear that thing.
Right. God knows exactly who we are, what we've gone through, all of our history and everything, and he gives us what we need.
And even that is not just across the board, because we've seen evidence where he'll take someone on the worst possible path and just, bloop, you're switching directions, and fix them, right? So you would think that it was up to you in some way, or up to what you did in the past in some way. It's not definable like that.
Well, it's certainly not clear cut. I mean, that's my story, right? I was on a path to become a really bad dude that you read about in the newspapers when I was a teenager. And I didn't want to pray that prayer, but I did. I said, God, take this away. And he did. And it set me on a path to be who I am today. And I'm a dad of beautiful kids. I love them. I take care of them. And I'm trying to build something good. I'm trying to draw people to Jesus. And, you know, I don't know how you get to a place where your heart is in a better spot than mine is. So yeah, absolutely. Case in point.
Yeah. I wish for the goodwill of others without the ego to put your good on them. it's a hard place to end up.
Yeah, it is. Well, and we serve a pretty amazing God. He takes us to where we need to be. So what I'm gathering sort of as a takeaway from this clip and from this discussion is just the breakdown of authoritative institutions is actually something that they've had coming, that it's necessary because they are corrupt. And really, my opinion is that everybody has to, well, not has to, but everybody should be building their own worldview from the ground up by going in and looking at all the things that are there and coming to conclusions themselves and not just trusting any kind of authoritative source.
It's been, again, scientific is a funny word, but it's been tested and proven that every human being does make their own worldview. You can be exposed to whatever you like. You've got to build your own worldview Every time.
What I mean by that, Greg, is that there are a lot of people who just accept a narrative because it is socially accepted by most of the people around them. That is not building your own worldview. That is accepting something that comes in from the outside instead of examining it at a granular level and picking through and deciding what's crap and what's not. So I disagree with you completely on that. That the point I'm making is that most people accept a socially acceptable narrative that comes at them from the outside world, and that's good enough for them. And yeah, you may call that constructing their own worldview, but it's not.
Okay. I am merely passing words. The studies showing our Christian evangelical style scientists offering backup.
Sure, but. What I'm getting at is that the way we put together a worldview is we accept a particular person's view of things or a particular source's view of things. That's how we do it.
1,000%. And you said it before, you know, some guy will read Star Wars and make it his whole life, right? That's the way that a lot of it's kind of human.
Right, nature. Right. That's exactly my point. It isn't that he isn't constructing his own worldview. It's that he is taking his cues from or his information from a source that is questionable. And, you know, if I find things that conflict in my worldview, if I find two points that don't agree with each other, that requires me to think things through at a level that is just tremendous.
It's literally painful.
Oh, yeah. It sucks because you know, these things are, this is a construct that I have put together very carefully and prayerfully and with a lot of consideration for my entire life. And that's what I'm advocating for, is that people don't accept authoritative views on things, that they actually have to go through the current zeitgeist, the current belief systems, and they have to pull out the things that make sense and examine them carefully. And they have to value the truth higher than anything else. And so when you find contradictions, it turns it into sort of a yes, no thing. And here's what I mean by that. Anything that is a lie, anything that is implanted in consciousness, popular consciousness by the enemy, is going to have an internal contradiction at some level. Even if it's like the suspension of disbelief when you read a book, you have to suspend disbelief because you're going to be able to find contradictions if you look hard. You know, authors try, and I try not to put contradictions in there, but you can't do it. You end up with them. And the narrative the enemy has constructed for us has those same contradictions. Because it's not true, it has internal contradictions. And when you find them and something seems off and you go digging, usually those contradictions get bigger and bigger. It's like evolution. The more you look at it, the more it's just full of holes and it doesn't fit and it doesn't work.
Well, sure. Well, and also, we put words on things before we're ready to. You could say something like, humans should stand up for their community and their family and fight for what they believe in. But then you could turn that around and break it in half and say men should, and women should, you know, safeguard their home and not fight, right? So we add new words, add new categories so that we don't contradict, because we say that these things are always true. And if it's not true, then it's another thing, i.e. male, female.
Okay, took me a minute to catch up with your train of thought there. I understand where you're going, though. I think that that's just a language thing, right? That when it comes to the ideas, those aren't so much dependent on language as just it's an idea, and you examine the idea separate from the language we're using to describe it, and you determine whether it's a useful idea. So I don't.
I think that's a great place to be when dealing with your removal of gatekeepers and the expression of everyone all at once all the time, i.e. too many crazy people.
Yeah.
Is that you have to take what they're saying, not in as the words they're saying, but the concepts that the picture they're drawing in the context they're drawing it in, And,
right.
And make that the better way to try and transcribe the words, because
even, well, of course you do.
It's so and then, hard.
And then you have to make some effort to determine whether there are internal contradictions to their beliefs and see if you can figure out where that goes. Hey, this is a good place to take a break. You got anything final you want to say here?
No, I've been kind of waiting on the break. I've got a couple of other places to go that are in that next topic that I have in mind. So
sounds great. All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Back in a minute, everyone.
Brightstar has been out for over a month now. I just want to say thank you to everybody who has helped to make it the success that it already is. I've got a huge, huge plans for the future. Great things going on, working on the audiobook, working on the anthology, working on book two. Everything's moving along. Just thank you, everyone. If you don't have a copy yet, you should grab one. Head over to e6universe.com. Use the promo code Israel for 10% off.
I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people enjoying Modern Apocrypha. As many of you have seen, I'm an avid coffee drinker, and I've been drinking North Arrow Coffee for a couple of pounds now. You can find North Arrow Coffee at northarrowcoffee.co, all one word, where they list coffee of the month and how green coffee is handled. I've been enjoying some of the number 4 Honduras and some of the number 10 Peru, available at northarrow.co. If you'd like to help support us even more, you can use discount code E6 for 10% off your coffee order today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome.
So, I know you had a particular place you wanted to go here, and actually you had me watch a video on a particular person.
Indeed, yeah. This
you
is know,
why you torture me with these things, Greg.
Well, you know, sometimes you just gotta to face the snake. And this is what initially got me on the idea that there are a lot of, you know, gatekeepers with their gates broken open, that we're getting just flows of information without any guidance as to what that is. What is it that you're viewing? And I'll bring up the name with, I suppose we should spend some time for anybody listening that this is not someone I would suggest to go listen to. This is not a teacher. This is an example of somebody in the world. The gentleman's name is Amon Hillman.
It's Ammon, A-M-M-O-N. Ammon Hillman. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. He's a nut bag.
He's quite out there. He's quite out there. For context, he is a Greek language specialist with a degree in ancient languages, specifically Greek, and has extreme opinions about biblical works that don't mesh with anything close to reality.
Well, and let me actually go a little further than that. So the video that I watched, and I didn't watch the whole video, but I watched enough to get a sense of the guy. And do you know what the word sorcery is translated from in the Greek?
Is it not medicine, or is it?
It's pharmakia.
Pharmaceutical, yeah.
Not pharmaceutical, pharmakia. That word sort of spawned a number of English words, or it is translated to a number of English words. And this guy is sort of a specialist in pharmakia. He's a specialist in sorcery, as the Bible would say. So I want, just on a logical level, someone who is a specialist in sorcery is someone who is not a person you should probably be trusting, because Even if they're being honest, they believe things that are not necessarily true. And this is the sort of the worldview that he has embraced comes from Greek texts on pharmakia.
Sure.
And he doesn't come right out and say exactly what he believes, but you can tell by what he's enthusiastic about that is what he holds dear, is these.
You can tell very strongly what he believes if you watch any of his modern interviews. He's very strong in his beliefs and he's very vocal.
Oh, sure. But what I'm saying is he doesn't necessarily spell out the basis of his worldview. He doesn't say, I'm a this, I'm a that. Instead, he talks about the things that he holds dear. And when you listen to that, in the video I watched, I don't know, dude.
Sure.
In the video I watched. So, but what I caught and what I don't think is a lie is that he believes very strongly in sorcery and that he is, well, okay. So then real quick, you have to understand where sorcery comes from. We know from Genesis that knowledge was given to humans by fallen angels before the flood. And some of that knowledge had to do with things like sorcery. Okay. And if you get into the Book of Enoch and other extra biblical texts, you get some more hint of what it probably was that was passed off to humans. And it was this sort of sorcerous knowledge. And what has been constructed around that is a religion. This is the Gnostic religion that is essentially a modern form of real Satanism. Satanism is like the false front that they put forward, but this is a real form of belief in and worship of fallen angels. So this dude basically believes in fallen angel worship at some level, whether he realizes it completely or not. That's where that body of belief comes from. And that's something that
I would say he realizes it, justifies it, and preaches it to others.
And I would say to our listeners that if you want to believe in fallen angel worship, that's your choice, but it is not going to lead you to good places. So, you know, if you decide you want to go listen to what the guy says, understand that that's kind of what you're getting yourself into. And that usually when you deal with people like that, the way they construct things is it takes a long time of listening to any one Gnostic practitioner to get any kind of real truth out of it, because the way their belief system is designed, it's to obfuscate truths and to share little tiny tidbits, not to actually lead people to a truth and show it to them. And that's actually a great way to tell when something is not good, right? Is it obfuscates the truth instead of trying to give it to you in a way that's useful.
Interesting. I would say it's worthwhile to listen to in the way that if you had an eyewitness of an American Indian from the 1600s, and he were here today in the Ukraine, and you pulled him aside and said, "What'd you see?" And he said, "He saw great metal chariots with big tubes on top, and they were screaming along the road." Well, he didn't tell you the truth, but he gave you an eyewitness account of what he saw. And it's up to you to figure out what really happened there. That's the way that this guy, he is an ancient language expert. He knows translations of words that I don't know. He just doesn't have any clue the context they were given in or how to read that. So in that eyewitness account side of things, it's useful to listen to someone who understands the language of a text and will tell you what words those say. To give you an interpretation is where you stop.
Well, and I only agree with that up to a point. There's obvious value in that, in listening to somebody who has understandings of things or has seen things you haven't. I don't want to disagree with that. But at the same time, if I have a very limited amount of time in my life, right? I have a very limited amount of time to do any number of things. And that's true of everybody. Even if you are independently wealthy and all you want to do is study topics, you still have a very limited amount of time because there's so much content going out that trying to listen to all of it is just ridiculously, I mean, you can't even come close. So you have to pick what it is you're going to spend your time on. And when it comes to people who have created their life around a tapestry of lies, they're not people who I would ever choose to spend time listening to unless I have a very compelling reason, because it's always going to be much more difficult to sort useful things out of what they have to say than it is to go to somebody like Jonathan Kahn or, you know, other Christian people who have messages to share, who have useful things to contribute. Those are always going to be a better place to spend your time, unless you have a very specific reason to go listen to guys like Ammon Hillman. And most of us don't, because most of what he says is crap and it's not worth our time.
It's interesting. I'm not opposed to knowing about something because I feel like this is preparing for an angle of attack that will hit the church right now. It's coming, right? This is lies that are about to hit. So preparing yourself for what's about to hit is not wrong. This is the warning to build your ark. This thing coming. They're telling you they're coming.
Right. I understand what you're saying. You're using him as an example of the narrative the enemy is preparing to try to attack us with. And I could see some of that, but you know, there are a million places where you get that. These lies about who Jesus is. Like, I heard some of his lies about who Jesus is and what he did. And those lies aren't new. He got those from places where other people were lying 100, 1,000, 2,000 years ago about who Jesus is and wrote it down. So it's like, which lies are coming at us? Well, you know, I'm not entirely sure, but none of what he had to say was particularly new, except in the sort of newly rediscovered mysticism sense where, oh yeah, we discovered these old texts that had these things to say about Jesus. And it's true. Believe me, bro.
Well, certainly, I would not deny that he is, a scholar of, Jesus, specifically Jesus. He's a Jesus scholar on a secular level who comes from a religious background, and that's messed with him.
Well, and he's not on a secular level. He is on a level of belonging to the enemy's religion.
And he certainly got that going on. Some of the things that I would flag as ways to pick out a different worldview that you can tell you shouldn't agree with these ideas. If someone were to say, I don't know, what's a really terrible extreme? Pick a term. Mao is a terrible extreme.
Oh, okay.
Right. Mao and Stalin, these kind of people are terrible extremes. Ammon literally uses the word beautiful to mean most extreme. So Mao is a beautiful communist because he's an extreme communist. I may be picking his policies up wrong, but he uses that word beautiful as a manipulative tool in the wrong way. We don't use beautiful in that way anymore. It doesn't mean most pure of a thing, right? Most pure evil, most pure good, most pure beauty.
Well, and I guess my question would just be why you're filling your head with that stuff, man, because there's no life in what he's saying. There's nothing for you to, you can take warning from it. Like you say, I suppose that's valid, but it's still one of those things where, you know, how much life are you getting out of that? And I don't know about you, but I don't have room for death and darkness inside me. It just adds to my darkness.
I certainly don't add it to myself. I see it as something I've seen what truth there was and seen what falsehood there was. There's no doubt that there is a Greek Bible, right? There's no doubt that.
Sure, but why are you giving attention to that particular thing?
Because I'm speaking to literally 5 million people that watched his 3-hour long interview where he's all about not true things about our Bible.
I guess if you want to put yourself in a position of trying to refute the nonsense, that's your choice. You know, actually, one of the interesting point here, if you don't mind if I digress just for a second, I don't remember whose law it is, but there's this concept that trying to refute a bad view takes many times as much time and effort as to create a bad view. And one of the ways the enemy attacks us is by putting out a multiplicity of bad views so that we cannot refute them all, because it takes a multiplicity of time and effort more than the bad views to actually refute the bad views. And I sort of grasped that before I realized that it was a formal law that somebody had defined. And it has always seemed to me that the better thing to do is to find truth and hold that up, because it refutes the lies by itself.
I still think this is something that I'm going to push back on, because listening to it without a good deal of armor on your intake, you're going to come across this. Somebody could easily come across this and think, oh, I have a mistranslation in my hand, and this man here is reading it direct. I mean,
you know, what's fascinating to me about what you're saying is you're essentially in the same position at some remove as that Keating guy.
No, I'm on the same position as the Weinstein guy, that you need to come up with. Don't ignore everyone, right? You are going to listen to everyone. You're not going to avoid listening to everyone. Saying that, no, I'm going to hear nothing means you're not going to hear the good either. And so you need to figure out tools so that you can hear everything and strain out the bad. One of those tools would be taking someone's mention of the word beautiful in a completely inappropriate context and realizing that the ways that they are thinking are not the ways you're thinking, right? Finding those mnemonic devices or...
I agree with this. I agree. You do. You have to find the ways to actually push out the bad information and to discover when someone is feeding you a line of some kind, whether they believe it or not. And I am sort of playing devil's advocate here just a little bit, because I do this too, right? We all do. We all hear something and it bugs us and we go, this is garbage. What is this nonsense? Need to get this. And you deal with it. You have to logically take it in, understand what's going on, and then figure out whether it's something that you should pay attention to or not. And I mean, we all do it. We have to. So yeah, I agree with you there.
Well, certainly. Well, and you've got a lot of layers in the story, because if you've got someone standing up with a Bible and they're saying things that doesn't discredit the Bible, it might discredit them, right? And so there's a lot going on in the topic and in the processing. Like you listen to a bit of this guy, I've listened to 5-6 hours and muddled, you know, marinated in my feeling on that for 5 days and just spat out, here's how he's wrong specifically. So I could tell someone else, here's how he's wrong specifically. I've brought up a bifocal view. He's got a moment in time view, right?
Again, the question is, can you deal with the multiplicity of views that are set against what you know to be true, or are you better off, as you said, giving people the tools they need to deal with the bad information wherever it comes from, and not actually usually addressing a lot of the bad stuff? Because there are specific targets that are worth taking out, right? I mean, I have aimed at a number of them, whether it's the Gnostic thing, whether it's the, you know, one thing after another, there are things that I aim at. It's just a question of picking your targets. So,
well, and yeah, and the broadest specific character topic for this one, it's been brought up many times, and it's an easy enough thing to keep in your utility belt for your arguments back to people. But the argument being is that there was an original Bible, and the Bible we have today is not. And if you look at Greek of the era, there was a guy I was listening to. He wrote out until he got bored. He stopped because he got bored. John loves Mary. Was that the line in the Bible? John loves Mary?
I don't know.
That should be. Anyway, he wrote it out in those exact words as 137 ways to write it exactly, 500 ways to write it generally, and another 1,200 ways to write it if you add the, because there's like 8 ways to say the in Greek. So,
okay.
The fact that it's not exact words is less important than is the meaning brought forward. And if you took all of the versions of the Bible from the first one to the last one and everyone discovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls, you took all of the copies we have, the meaning is preserved. A word here, a word there. You know, there's three or four places where the meaning could be changed by the words that are used, and they're not. I mean, like one of them is, it was pray and fast as opposed to pray. As far as like what the instruction in the Bible was, whether it said pray and fast or pray. And there's three places over hundreds of years of trying to figure out a way to break it. We found three places where maybe it was different. But of the anytime anyone brings up a concept of a difference in Bible, we tried. We can't prove a difference in Bible. The Bible says what it always said.
Well, and one of the things about this is actually an interesting point to go into here. You know, most people take the view that there was an original Bible and that there may be mistranslations or it may not have come down appropriately. And what they're not taking into account there is that we serve a living God who uses this document to communicate with his people, which means that when people actually go look at it, he's acting on that down through the ages to preserve the information there that's important. And that doesn't mean that every detail will be handed down to us the way that it was understood at the beginning, but it does mean that the critical things, the important concepts, are going to be preserved in it in a way that we can get at. And, you know, it's an interesting conversation. I had with a Greek Orthodox pastor on the bus to Men's Encounter a month or two ago. He was talking about how, the basic concepts in the Bible are preserved, that you can get the basic message in any translation. And then he went on about a 15-minute rant about how bad most English translations are and how much more you can get in the Greek. And as we've been talking here, you and I, just now, something occurred to me. And it goes something like this. We don't have the worldview of the people who were reading it back then. Which means that in order for us to actually get out of it what they got out of it, there's a lot of information, like a lot of information that we would need. And some of that I have been digging into. At the beginning of the episode, I talked about the Nephilim and stuff that I've been learning over the past few days. There's a guy named Gary Wayne, and I highly recommend if people are interested in the subject, go look up Gary Wayne. He is a fascinating guy, and he talks about a lot of things that are just kind of mind-blowing that I didn't know about, but that were common knowledge for the people who originally, would have been the consumers of the Greek and the Hebrew versions of this scripture. And if you and I, reading this book, were to understand things the way they did from the context that they owned, that is referred to sort of in passing in the scriptures, our view of things would be tremendously different. Let me just give you one quick example. When you look at the nations that Israel was told to basically genocide when they came into the land of Canaan, because they were instructed to genocide them, it turns out when you look at the history of those nations actually came from the seed of fallen angels. They came from the seed of Satan. And you remember in Genesis, it talks about God saying, I will put enmity between her seed and your seed. And you will basically, it's a war that was declared there, a war between the progeny of Satan and the progeny of humans. And that wasn't poetic language, man. That was real stuff. And God used Israel to wipe out these groups of Nephilim descended people when their iniquity. And you notice, interestingly enough, if you read those scriptures, it's very careful to point out that he waited until their iniquity was complete to have them wiped out. And that's important because even in the case of Nephilim, God doesn't just willy-nilly have us go around killing people. Instead, it's a case of when their iniquity was complete, he sent Israel to deal with this problem because it was a problem. And that's really interesting. And you know, even we even have, and I'll let you talk here in just a second. We even have a record of St. Christopher, if you look at the old iconography of him, was a dog-headed giant person. We have some indication that St. Christopher was descended from the Nephilim. And that's fascinating because if that's true, and I tend to suspect it probably is, though I haven't looked into it in great depth, it means that God is willing to save even them, even those, and that he doesn't set them aside for destruction until they're at a point where there's no saving them. There's nothing that can be done. They've made their choice.
It is certainly an interesting bit. There's no denying Nephilim as a physical presentation, or is that something that is denied, something that is a conversation in the Christian space?
I don't understand the question.
I see Nephilim lately in the last 15 years described as a physical, here's an alien, here's a from the heavens, here's a servant of God, here's a physical.
Well, the historical understanding up until the 1800s, they were just acknowledged as physical beings that came about as a result of the interbreeding of humans and angelic beings. That was just taken for granted, basically, for thousands of years of history. It was only when the enemy started working to erase spiritual reality from the modern consciousness that started to be doubted. So it was a case of the enemy trying to, again, to scrub our memories of something that was inconvenient for his narrative in the coming time.
That's fair. It does seem
that. And it worked. It worked because among Christians, so just as an example of this, there's this view, it's called the Sethite view, where the idea is that in Genesis, where it talks about the sons of God coming into the daughters of men and bearing children with them, there's this view that it was the sons of Cain taking the daughters of Seth, which was a good lineage, and breeding with them. And that's not what the words say, but it was done sort of for the same reason that the modern, that clip we watched earlier, how they were trying to write creation worldview out entirely. It's the same thing. It's the enemy trying to write the truth out of the Bible in the modern consciousness. 300 years ago, the Sethite view was considered a weird, minority, silly view. Now it's the majority view among people who actually understand the question, which isn't most people because it has been written out of the consciousness of most Christians. Most Christians aren't even aware of this. Yeah, we had these divine beings that actually had demigod children among humans on the earth, and it's a real thing.
It seems to be the obvious records of giants and the idea that one man would wrestle with 20 and win, you know, the facts of the matter was certainly that they were average people and something else.
Hey, we're coming up on the end of this. Anything you want to close with? Anything you want to say here?
Well, I would encourage you to view the things that are out there that are getting so much viewership, just to be prepared for the arguments that will be popular arguments in the moment. Those will be rotating. And never assume that the stamp whatever slogan it is, whether that's Harvard or that's somebody's theological college or, you know, the Vatican, whatever stamp they put on it is not the stamp of truth. The stamp of truth comes from God. But so take in the information, but run it through your ability to read out.
Right. Through your own filters. Mm. And I would add to that, that for any of our listeners who haven't taken the time to examine the basic building blocks on which their view of the world is constructed, that you ought to intentionally do that. You ought to look at what you believe and why, and one thing after another, go through and actually tear it apart and question it, and ask God for help doing that, because it's important.
I would say also that whenever I would do anything like this, I would certainly pray on it and see. I wouldn't just say, oh, I feel this way. I would really muddle over it, but I also wouldn't do it alone. I have you. I've run across this thing, and man, is this weird.
There's wisdom in a multitude of counsel.
Right. So I would never say go into it blind and go into it naive and go into it alone. Don't do those things. Don't go into it blind. Don't go into it naive, and don't go into it alone.
And with that, thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Till next time, guys.